The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Hello, Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to BGN Radio. This is episode number 16, and this is your Eagles-Jaguars preview in London. We're not in London. We're doing this stateside. I'm John Stolness, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. I'm a contributor for BleedingGreenNation.com. And joining me, as he does every week for our Eagles preview show, is the man, the myth, the legend, the brains behind the operation at BleedingGreenNation.com. Brandon Lee Gowton, BLG, how you feeling, buddy? I know you're feeling a little under the weather this week, pal. So you hanging in there all right? You getting your Ricola cough drops and your NyQuil and all that good stuff, buddy?
John, I think it's the Eagles' fault. I think we can blame the Eagles for making me sick. They're stressing me out way too much.
Yeah.
I was there at Lincoln Financial Field on Sunday. I'm in the press box. I'm watching this team. They're up 17-0. I'm thinking, all right, you know, the season's back on track. They just blew out the Giants. Now they're going to beat a quality Panthers team here. It's going to be a good win for this team. 4-3, back closer to the NFC East lead. Everything's going well. And no, that's not the case. Yeah. That's not the case. It's not the reality, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, that game last week definitely took a hit to a lot of people's immunity, I think. Mm-hmm. You're not alone. And yeah, and I want to, before we get into the injury report, we'll talk about some trade stuff. We're going to get into some of the matchups as well. We'll give you a couple of picks for the NFL slate on Sunday, and then give you our Eagles-Jaguars review a little bit. But, you know, you're just talking about kind of how through three quarters, in your mind, you could kind of see the whole second half of the season mapped out. Because it really is amazing when you think about the difference between having a 4-3 record going into this game against the Jaguars versus a 3-4 record. Because the thing that the Eagles have done is they've blown the easy part of their schedule. Like, they still have to play the Rams. They still have to play the Saints. And I know the NFC East is not a juggernaut of a division, but you don't sweep your division. I mean, and especially when you're a team that is as flawed as the Eagles are in a few key spots, and you've played as unevenly as the Eagles have had so far this year, I highly doubt they're going to blitz through the NFC East undefeated. So what you've essentially done is, if you don't win this game on Sunday in London against the Jaguars, you fall to 3-5. If you want to go 10-6 at that point, what you have to go 7-1 over your last eight games to finish 10-6. You have to go 6-2 to even just finish 9-7. Mm-hmm. When you've got the toughest part of your schedule. The Eagles have already blown what should have been wins against weaker teams like the Buccaneers. Blown games that they had in the bag against the Titans and against the Panthers. That's all. They've wasted those opportunities. And now the tougher part of the schedule is coming, BLG. And they're looking at a scenario where if they don't take care of this Jaguars game on Sunday, they're in real, real trouble.
Yeah, and they might already be in real, real trouble.
True.
Like you're saying,
true.
I mean, just looking at the East, Washington is at the top of this division here at, what, 4-2 here?
4-2.
And if you look at their schedule the rest of the way, it's not very hard. I think there's only one team above 500, and that's the Texans, who I left. They're above 500, but they, like, they're not a good team.
Yeah,
I think.
In air quotes.
Yeah, as we're as we're talking and doing this on a Thursday night, they are locked. What's the score here in this game with the Dolphins? It is, they're up 4 right points now on the Dolphins right now at halftime. So, like, they're not. They're I know if they win this, they'll have won 5 in a row, but I still don't think that team is that great. So, like, Washington could easily, you know, go, they don't even have to, you know, have this super strong stretch, you know what I mean? As long as they kind of just do okay, they could easily just win the division, especially if the Eagles can't get out of their way. I do want to read something here from Greg Rosenthal at NFL.com, because I think this is very true, and I think it's something that we don't like to admit. But he wrote this up on an article for NFL.com, and he says here that there is something unsatisfying and uncomfortable about recognizing what a massive, perhaps dominant role randomness plays every NFL Sunday in determining the latest standings. It's as if we want this sport that we invest so much time into make more sense than it really does, to apply some order after the fact where it doesn't. I choose to embrace the chaos, except that many teams are roughly equal, and try to separate the trends with staying power from the things we can't possibly know ahead of time, which is most everything. So the point of me reading that is that it's tough. I think the Eagles are just in a spot where, like, things have been so close, and sometimes you're just unlucky. Like, I know that's not fun to talk about, especially, like, on a podcast here, because, like, or just the culture we live in of takes where, you know, someone has to be to blame if you lose. And, you know, I get it. And there's truth to that. But at the same time, sometimes, like, shit happens. Like, that's just, that's not, like, a very
fun thing
to say, but it's just true. And I think that's kind of, I don't think that's, you know, I don't think that solely explains the Eagles' problems, because there are very real issues. But I think that's part of it. I think that goes into it. And we talked about it, John, I think many times at this point, where last year the Eagles just had a lot of things going for them. And that's not to say it was a fluke. It's just, like, because every team is going to have some things going for them at some point. It's just, with everything the way it's going, and I'm not giving up on the season. I'm not. I still have hope. But it just, with how it's trending, you just get the sense that, man, this doesn't feel like this team's year. Like, last year felt like this team's year. This year just, it doesn't feel like that right now.
Well, when you have this many things going wrong, like injuries, you can't control injuries. Injuries are part of the luck factor that you're talking about. A couple of those injuries were because of how long the season went last year, but a lot of the injuries that they're dealing with now have nothing to do with that. It's just bad luck. Look at the 4th-and-10 play that the Eagles gave up to the Panthers on the Torrey Smith reception. Yeah. It was a Jalen Mills. He just fell down.
And the defensive line got to Cam. Like,
It's just inches. They had the right play. They had that. I think Jim Schwartz had a good defensive call there, and the defense was one play away. And last year, they make that play.
Yeah.
When the defense is one play away from getting off the field, they make the play. I wanted to talk about turnovers a little bit later on in the podcast, but turnovers, a lot of turnovers is luck. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. You fumble a few different times, and sometimes the ball bounces into your offensive lineman's arms when Carson Wentz fumbles. Sometimes it bounces in the opposite direction towards the defensive lineman. You know, when you with interceptions, sometimes you're a step and a half too late, or, you know, you just, the ball goes right through your hands when you should have hauled it in. A Jake Elliott field goal goes just barely wide right because a wind gust takes it away. These are all things that, yes, if you have a lot of depth on your team like the Eagles had last year, you can overcome some of the bad luck. And losing your stud quarterback, the MVP of the league, with 3 weeks to go in the season is about as unlucky as you can get, and the Eagles overcame it. But that doesn't mean that they also didn't get great fortune in Nick Foles playing out of his mind down the stretch.
For sure. And like, when I say that again, it's not like, oh, they were just lucky, and I'm like trying to take away from the credit. Again, every team right. that wins a championship in pretty much any sport, for the most part, maybe not like, you know, the Warriors and like a dynasty team like that, but just in general, and I think in the NFL especially, has to get lucky. They just have to. Like, that's, it takes some luck. It takes being good. Like, it's a combination of things. It's not simple as the best team wins every year in the NFL. It's just, that's not how it works. Like, it's just not the how it's not how it's set up to work. Like, honestly, part of what we love about the NFL so much in general, as NFL fans, is that there's such great parity. To me, that's part of what makes it so fun. Because every year, in theory, unless like you've been the Browns for the past so many years, and for the most part, you know, teams have a chance to win every single year. It's not like, I know there's the Patriots and they're dominant and they contend every year, but for the most part, like, a lot of teams, you know, have a chance. They have, even if they don't win it, I'm saying, like, you can at least see, like, okay, they have a path here for it. It's not like the NBA where it's just like, okay, this team has zero chance to even get to the playoffs or make it out of the first round. It's just not like that. So I think that's something to keep in mind here, is this, like, and it's not this great failure. For I think that's something that kind of gets lost in the losing here. I kept thinking about that on Sunday. Like, it's obviously a failure. They lost the game. It's very disappointing. But in the context of expectations as a whole, it's not easy to repeat as Super Bowl champions. There's a reason nobody does it. Like, this has happened once in the salary cap era. And then forget that for a second. There hasn't been a repeat NFC East winner since 2004. Like, even that isn't easy. It's very hard to do. Like, it's not just... So I don't think it should be held against the Eagles in this way where, like, oh, they're just blowing this golden opportunity to get another Super Bowl. Like, no, it's not like that. It's not that simple. It's not that easy. And I think it's important to have that perspective when you think about what's going on. I'm not saying you shouldn't be upset or frustrated. I'm just saying, like, you can't look at this like, oh, this is just so simple to win. They're not doing it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally hear what you're saying. I totally agree with that. And, you know, it's one season is different from the other. I remember the Patriots season after their first Super Bowl win against the Rams. They didn't make the playoffs that year, but then they went to the Super Bowl the two following years after that and won 3 out of 4. You know, sometimes you get a season where it doesn't work out for you, or you've got the hangover. I mean, we haven't talked a lot about the hangover, but, you know, maybe the hangover is a real thing. And we'll see, you know, if they can shake it here over the second half of the season. This team still is talented, BLG, and like you mentioned, if they hadn't blown 2 fourth-quarter leads over the first 7 weeks of the season here, they'd be 5-2 right now, and we'd be singing a much different tune. And so that's what makes this game on Sunday in London that much more important against the Jaguars, because they have to get to 4-4 in order to give themselves, I think, a real shot at getting back into the playoffs here at the end of the season. And this will be the Eagles' first ever game overseas, regular season game overseas. The last time they played in London was in a preseason game back in 1991 against the Bills. I remember a preseason game in 89, BLG, and this tells you I'm old, but a preseason game against the Browns, I know it as the Gizmo Williams game. Do you know who Gizmo Williams was?
No idea, but I love the name.
Okay. He was this little guy that
sounds
had
like
all kind. Yeah, a little guy named Gizmo. He's named after one of the little creatures from the 80s movie, Gremlins. He was named after the Gremlin, the character Gizmo, because he kind of looked like Gizmo from the Gremlins a little bit. And he was a fast, super speedy, mostly a kick returner type guy from the CFL that the Eagles signed as a free agent. And he was kind of an interesting guy. He was kind of fascinating. Fans really loved him. And in that preseason game, he caught a touchdown pass from Syracuse's QB Don McPherson, who was getting some second string reps for the Eagles in the 1989 preseason. After the catch, Williams did like a forward leap in the air like Ozzie Smith used to do. I think we've seen some NFL players do after he caught a touchdown in the preseason game. And this is Buddy Ryan. After the game, Buddy Ryan said, he's got to learn to play NFL football. He can get away with that in Canada. The jury is still out on Gizmo Williams. He was not impressed with Gizmo. But I remember that distinctly, that the lead up to that game, because that was the first time the Eagles had ever played in London. It was at Wembley Stadium. It was a really big deal at the time. The NFL wasn't playing regular season games over there. I remember Jerome Brown was like messing around with British soldiers wearing their hats and stuff like that, or British police. It was actually kind of fun. And now this is a situation where the Eagles are going into London playing against the Jaguars team that plays there every single year, BLG. And the Jags have won it 3 years in a row in London. Is that an advantage for Jacksonville coming into this game? And if it is, how big of an advantage do you think that is?
I definitely think it's significant, just having that experience of the whole travel and what to expect And, you know, this is our routine when we go over there. This is the hotel we go to. This is what time you should go to bed. Like, they have this down. You know, it's a system, yeah. And they played well. I think they're averaging, what, like 34 points in their last three or so. Their last three games in London here. So they've clearly had success over there. You look at Blake Bortles, who was just benched last week in favor of Cody Kessler. London Bortles is a real thing. He has 8 touchdowns to just 1 interception in his last 3 London starts. I don't know if that's just coincidence or what, but I mean, he's playing well over there.
Powered by fish and chips, man. Powered by fish and chips.
Maybe. So it's kind of curious to me, or maybe not curious is the right word, but kind of not great to me that Malcolm Jenkins is calling him out in a way this week when he had brought up that the reason why there's evidence that Kaepernick is being blackballed. I mean, just look at our week 8 opponent. And, like, I know Malcolm's main point there wasn't to take a shot at Blake Bortles. Like, that wasn't the goal of his comments. He was, you know, talking more about Kaepernick. But still, man, like, it's just, don't give this team more bulletin board material. Especially, like, when you're 3-4 and you just lost. Like, don't say that.
Because it's going to make Malcolm was all wrapped up in that Eric Reed thing still, and I think he's trying to get back on the good side of those guys, and he definitely stepped in it by doing that.
Yeah, because I mean, like, because what's the upside here? The best case is Bortles does play bad and the Eagles win, and no one, you know, like, oh, Malcolm Jenkins was right, and that's it. But, like, if Blake Bortles torches the secondary, like, Malcolm is not going to hear that. He's not going to stop hearing that for the rest of the season. So
no, I hear you, and so it's definitely, we'll see what kind of Blake Bortles we get, and we'll get into Blake here in just a second because he definitely has had an interesting week, and we'll get into all that here in just a few minutes when we get to the matchups. First, let's knock out the injury report here, BLG. We know that linebacker Nathan Gary, Sidney Jones, cornerback, the slot corner, and Darren Sproles once again have been declared out for the game. They are not traveling with the team. Corey Graham did not practice with the team on Thursday, but he is going to make the trip. Of course, you know, Corey Graham is no great shakes, but, you know, it certainly is, an issue. Some of these injuries. And of course we haven't gotten a chance, you and I, at least, to talk about Derek Barnett now going on IR for the season. We're going to see more of Josh Sweat on Sunday. So, talk a little bit about Derek Barnett. I mean, he was third on the team in sacks with 2.5 sacks, but his greatest value came in the run game. And I guess, BLG, if there was any one spot on the defense, really even on the team, where they could absorb a loss like this, it is on the defensive line, right?
I mean, in theory, just because, you know, the Eagles have a lot of quality defensive ends here, but it's not ideal because not only are you losing a good second-year player who is, I think, you know, Derek Barnett really young, 22 years old, and really projecting upward. I know he hasn't been this dominant pass rusher yet, but you've liked what you've seen basically in every other aspect of his game besides that, which is good to see. And losing him, it's not just about, like, not him not being on the field. It's the butterfly, the domino effect of everything that happens after that. I mean, now the Eagles are counting on Michael Bennett and Brandon Graham and Chris Long and Josh Sweat. And specifically Sweat, who had only played 15 snaps, I believe, defensive snaps before this week, to suddenly have these bigger roles. And that kind of potentially limits their effectiveness, because part of what makes the rotation so great is they're able to rotate these guys and manage their snap counts. And now they're not going to be able to do that as much. I don't think they trust Sweat fully to kind of just throw him and put him in there as a role that was previously being held by Chris Long, you know, or whoever was at the bottom of the rotation there. I think he's going to play a little bit sparingly in comparison to Barnett in the previous system. So that's unfortunate. And already, like, you're so thin at defensive tackle, and you're counting on Brandon Graham and Michael Bennett to take some snaps in there, and now you lose a starting defensive end, which stretches you out thinner out there. So it's not ideal. And we'll see if Haloti Ngata plays this week. He traveled with the team as well. He's been limited in practice. He was also limited all last week, and he didn't play. So maybe there's a chance he plays there. Corey Graham switching back to the secondary there. I don't think he plays, considering he didn't practice Wednesday and Thursday, but he traveled. So maybe there's an outside chance he's suddenly feeling better and he does play. But across the board, this team is just really banged up. Like I said, Nada might be back this week. DJ Alexander helps your linebacker depth and on special teams. Maybe you get him back. He's been limited in practice. But also the Jaguars are very banged up as well. It's not just the Eagles. You're looking at AJ Bouye. It did not practice and won't travel. That's, you know, obviously one of their starting corner opposite of Jalen Ramsey. So that's a big loss. And it's not just him. You look at DJ Hayden, who did travel but hasn't practiced this week and has been out for a couple weeks now with a toe issue, and Tyler Patman, who is DJ Hayden's backup there in the slot. So, I mean, the Jaguars could potentially be without those three guys. That's significant. I think the rest of their guys there in that secondary are like rookies and like undrafted free agents. Not a lot of experience outside of Jalen Ramsey. So you can almost like just not have to. I'm pretty sure you can kind of just work around Jalen Ramsey, basically. Like, it's not like you have to test him out and throw his way a ton in this game. But it's not ideal. Both of these teams are banged up. You know, it's week 8. You're going to have all these injuries. Another issue is that starting tight end James O'Shaughnessy was downgraded to not practicing today after being limited on Wednesday. And Jacksonville's already without their two top tight ends. So they might be without their top three tight ends. So there's a lot of injuries on both sides of the ball here. That's definitely, you know, a big factor this week.
Well, and running back Leonard Fournette may not play.
Yeah, he's out. Well, he's definitely out. Yeah.
He's definitely out. Okay, because he's got a hamstring thing going on. So, the Jags are as banged up. And really, the Jaguars are in almost the exact same position the Eagles are right now. They're at 3-4, and they made it to the AFC Championship game last year. They came into the season thinking that they were going to dominate the AFC South, and the Texans obviously are having something to say about it now that they've gone on a little bit of a winning streak here. The Jags came into the season thinking that, you know, maybe Blake Bortles had taken a little bit of a step forward, and now they're well, we'll get to Blake in just a second. I'm licking my chops too, man. They at 3-4, their season is kind of on the line too here in London as well. But before we get into the game, I want to just kind of tackle some of the trade stuff and really what this game means for the trade stuff, BLG. Because as you know, I wrote a piece for BleedingGreenNation.com echoing what I think a lot of people are feeling, is that right now this 2018 season doesn't really feel like an all-in season at this point. You know, we were talking about adding Le'Veon Bell for a second round pick a couple of weeks ago, and or adding some guys who may be under contract next year but are getting up there in age, like a LeSean McCoy or something like that, where you would be expending some pretty significant capital in the 2019 draft to get a guy who may really only help you here in the 2018 season. And at 3-4, you could still make the argument maybe for some of these guys, for some of the names that are out there on the trade block, but you know, if you're not getting someone who can help you, who's not on the youngish side and can help you next year and the year after, in addition to this year, there's no way the Eagles should be giving up prime trade capital for the 2019 draft for moves that are only going to help here in 2018. What do you think?
Completely agree. I mean, these picks that the Eagles have are more valuable, arguably, than they've ever been, because Carson Wentz is going to be due for this big extension. He'll be eligible. The Eagles necessarily don't have to give it to him because he has that fifth-year option. They could wait, although I think, you know, waiting is kind of silly because the price is potentially only going to go up. So the Eagles are in a tight cap situation, obviously, moving forward. You feel good about them navigating that, of course, because Howie Roseman always finds a way to do that. But still, I mean, I think the draft picks are going to be a big part of that moving forward. You need that cheap, inexpensive, team-controlled talent there, as opposed to, you know, acquiring someone at the deadline who has this big cap hit. And so not only you're taking on that money, but then you're giving away something that could save you money in the future. So you have to consider both things there. I still think the Eagles I don't think Howie wants to give up anything more than, say, like a fourth round pick at the deadline here. I think anything too much higher than that isn't like, it's probably too rich for his blood, unless it's like a no brainer. Like if you're trading.
Do you think he offered a second rounder for Amari Cooper, which was the rumor?
I think there's some credence to that. I mean, it's not impossible to imagine just because they have the 2 seconds next year.
Yeah.
And Amari Cooper is only like 24 years old.
Yeah, he's young.
And they could easily feel like this guy, you know, has a good trajectory and maybe they were super high on him coming out of the draft. So I think that's possible. I'm a little hesitant just because, you know, Mike Silver, questionable, maybe your track record a little bit there. And it's very rich to acquire a player like that who is going to have like a $13.9 million cap hit next year on his fifth year option. So they would pretty much have to extend him too. So I think it's possible. I'm not going to rule it out. But I don't think they're trying to make this big splash in terms of, I just don't think they want to give that up. Again, I think it's more of like what we saw last year where you're trying to buy on someone who potentially is on their rookie deal with like two more years left, so including this year and next year. So you kind of have that extra year of talent there, like they did with Ajayi, someone who can help in 2017 and 18. That was their goal, or at least that's what worked out for them. It wasn't just this short-term trade. I definitely think we can rule anyone out who is, you know, not under contract through next year, unless it's just like a clear rental for cheap. You know, if it's like a seventh round pick and you're getting a guy, or if it's just a total flyer, then, you know, I see that. But I just don't think they're giving up anything significant at this point. And I don't think they should. I think they should keep the picks. If there's good value to be had out there, like if you're trading a third round pick for Patrick Peterson, which isn't going to happen, but I'm saying like if there's some no brainer value out there, go and get it, even if like it might be expensive cap wise. But otherwise, I just think, you know, how are we probably going to sit back here and kind of just make some kind of not super exciting trade?
So I wonder if like the strategy changes if the Eagles win and they move to 4-4, whether or not they get more aggressive and go after, you know, these guys aren't on their rookie deals, but like Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders or a wide receiver like that, guys who are still productive. I mean, you look at the numbers, Sanders is having a great year. But what would it take to get a guy like that? He is under team control for next year. And if he's still being productive, I think he's under team control for an additional 2 years after this year. I don't remember exactly. I looked it up earlier this week. And I
looked it up here.
Yeah. But a guy like that, I mean, you know, you're talking about guys on the rookie deals like with Ajayi, and that would obviously be the smarter thing. But
2019, yeah.
Okay.
Just one more.
So I wonder if, like, the calculus for Roseman changes if they win versus if they lose. I mean, obviously, if they lose, this team might even turn into somewhat of a seller. I think they, and it's kind of interesting using these words for the NFL trade deadline. Usually these words are only reserved for the Major League Baseball trade deadline. But, you know, I do think that if the Eagles lose, I think they make a harder push to try and trade Nick Foles in the week leading up to the trade deadline. Because if you're 3-5, and the odds are now really stacked against you to make the playoffs. I mean, I don't know what their playoff odds would fall to, but I got to imagine it'd be in the 10% range, maybe even less than 10%.
Yeah.
Why not at that point try to see what you can get for Nick Foles to a team that is you know, really involved in the playoff push, has a great shot to make the postseason, but may not like the guy that they have, but starting a quarterback.
The Jaguars.
You know what? That's not crazy, right?
I mean, maybe the Eagles should lose on purpose just to. No, I'm kidding. But
poor Nick.
But I mean, there's like, I think the frustration with that has picked up a little bit more steam in the quote mainstream media. I see, you know, our good friend Joe Giglio at WIP, also Jack Fritz producing that show, talking a lot recently about how Nick Foles, you know, like keeping him at a 13.9 or either 14.3, whatever his cap hit is this year, biggest on the team outside of Fletcher Cox, is not like the best use of resources. And I know people will be like, oh, well, you know, you got to be loyal. He won the Super Bowl. Okay, that's fine. But then you can't get mad. Like, you can't get as mad when the team is losing because they didn't do everything they could to maximize this roster, in my opinion. When you're spending much money on a backup, like, look at Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't know if the Eagles could get him. That's not exactly my point. But I'm just saying, like, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, is playing very well, and he has a $3.3 million cap hit. Like, you're paying, like, $11 million more for that for a guy who, you know, is your backup and played two games this year and did not play very well in those two games. You went 1-1, and, you know, the stats weren't pretty. So it's not like you paid all this money and he put up these great performances. And if you're paying for past production, I mean, like, again, I get it in the sense of there's some emotional intelligence involved there. But overall, like, when you look at the harsh reality of winning this year, like, you need to make some of those sacrifices, and it's not going to be easy. You can't just like pick and choose where you want to make sacrifices. Like, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You have to, it's a cold cut. I don't think cold cut business works well. I mean, there might be deli meats and stuff involved.
Some turkey, but some ham.
That's not what I meant to say. It's a cold business. So I think to a bigger point on that there is that, you know, everyone's getting mad at Jim Schwartz or Doug Peterson, Jalen Mills, even Carson Wentz because of the end of the game thing. Not a lot of people getting mad at Howie Roseman. And I think that's kind of he's getting off a little easy here with that, because you look at how he pressed all the right buttons last year with Chris Long and Patrick Robinson and LeGarrette Blount and all the guys he added. And he deserves a ton of credit for that. But this year, it's not working out. Like, what has he done? What has Howie Roseman really done here to make this team great or really good for 2018? And, you know, like, the Michael Bennett trade was great. But I think that's it. I think it's just that. And maybe the Dallas Goedert pick, because, you know, he looks promising. Maybe Avante Maddox, although, I think he's probably just fine for what you're getting there. And I look at the 2017 draft class, and something like Barnett's hurt.
Oh, boy.
And who else is hurt? Mac Hollins is hurt. So some of it's injury, and that's not necessarily like they were injury-prone guys heading into the draft. But, like, you're getting nothing out of that class right now, because Barnett is hurt. Sidney Jones, that is something that you can blame for the injury thing, because he has this track record of being hurt. Rasul Douglas cannot even get on the field, even though there is clearly need for improved cornerback play. And Dexter McDougal is coming in off the street and basically playing the whole game at nickel while Douglas can't get on the field. Hollins is out due to an injury. Donnell Pumphrey is back on the practice squad and still hasn't played an NFL snap and may never. Who knows? Fifth round was Shelton Gibson, who, like, he can't get on the field, even though you desperately need help as a deep threat. And in theory, he could provide that. But for whatever reason, the coaching staff clearly doesn't trust him. Nate Gary is hurt and is nothing really more than a backup special teams player anyway. And then Elijah Qualls, not even on the team. And Corey Clement, if you want to loop him in there, since he was undrafted free agent signing, I mean, he hasn't really given this team what we expected this year. And maybe it's because he's hurt. I mean, gosh, that guy had 8 attempts for 6 yards on Sunday, and he fumbled one time. So, so you're not getting enough out of this.
He's got to still be hurting.
You hope so, because if not, that's really concerning. And I love Corey. I'm not a Corey hater by any means, but that's, you know, that's not good enough. And specifically with Pumphrey and Clement, like, man, this team needs help at running back right now, and you're not getting good production. And you had those things that looked like they might be something. Or at least you would hope they would be, and just getting nothing.
Yeah, that's where having an extra second round pick in the draft next year would be really nice, to spend one of those on a young running back that you can kind of build around. Because you don't want to spend a first rounder on a running back, but, you know, if you can use one of your 2 second rounders to get a back like that, you know, I think that's kind of the area if you want kind of a high upside running back, but, you know, you don't want to spend a first or second round pick. Hey, you got an extra second rounder. Maybe that's a good spot to do that. So. Because right now there isn't one that you can look at and say, man, that's a guy I can see being here for a long while. Maybe Clement will still be that guy, but obviously the injuries have taken a toll on him so far this year. I did want to ask you this real quick before we get into the matchups. And I know we're about a half hour into this podcast and we haven't broken down the game a whole lot just yet. But I had to ask you, for those of you who didn't listen to the Kiston Solak show this week, Ben had a fiery hot take that I wanted to talk to you about. And he was saying that if the Giants are in full-on sell mode, that the Eagles should be calling about Odell Beckham Jr. And believe me, the talent would be amazing. Having that guy on the roster would be amazing. But in my mind, BLG, and you correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm reading the room wrong here, aside from the cash that he is owed, which is substantial, And the cap space ramifications that go along with that. You mentioned they're going to have to pay Carson Wentz here coming up pretty soon. How many first rounders would the Eagles have to give up for that guy? You know, it's not just that you'd have to pay him a lot of money. I can't even begin to think about the prospect capital, the draft pick capital that you would have to give up for that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see it happening. The only reason I could see it happening is if they're just like, we're just done. We're done with the drama here for a cost lower than expected. Like, that's the only way it would happen, which I don't think is likely. I mean, they just signed him. You know, they made that commitment. But it, I mean, yeah, it would be significant. It would have to be at least one first, if not more. So it would be great to have a player,
at least more than one first,
a guy of that player's caliber. But I also, in keeping with my brand and being like, I don't want that personality on my team, I'll just pass.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. And so now we move on. Let's talk about this Jaguars game, and we broke down the injury report just a second ago, and. You know, we've seen both sides of the ball suffer here over these last few weeks, especially in that game on Sunday against the Panthers that they blew. Obviously, the defense allowing 21 fourth quarter points was bad. It's the second time this year they've blown a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter. The defense has, but the defense was also pitching a shutout going into that fourth quarter. And as we mentioned, some of the plays there on those final two drives came due to some bad luck. It was a lot of bad play mixed in there as well. But again, you had the offense, which is in a real rut, and they're still not putting points on the board. 22 points a game, which is 6 points fewer than through 7 games last year. They've scored more than 23 points just once this year. That was the Giants game. Last year, they scored 28.5 points a game. I mean, this is an offensive first league, and the offense is just not putting points on the board. And BLG, I think all of these different things are all kind of meshed together. Like, we talk about the Eagles don't get enough turnovers. I think, what do they have as far as turnovers go?
Like, takeaways? They're
6 takeaways.
Yeah, they're like, I think 27th, tied for 27th.
Right. Last year they had 31 takeaways at this point. This year they have 6 takeaways. Mm. And it seems as though, because they haven't been getting many takeaways, they have had long fields virtually every time they come on the field. I think they have the third worst starting field position in football. And so because the Eagles aren't getting the ball downfield, they don't have the big playability. For whatever reason, they're not using Nelson Aguilar as a field stretcher. They're running him on jet sweeps, it seems like, every other play, and getting him the ball at the line of scrimmage and saying, all right, we're going to want you to make some guys miss here. Something he can do, but it's not his ideal usage. You know, you basically have this offense where it's a high completion percentage offense where, again, you're just getting little chunks here and there. Maybe you break off a 15 or a 20-yarder to Zach Ertz or Alshon Jeffrey once in a while. But for the most part, like we saw against the Panthers last week, we're looking at 10-play drives, 12-play drives, 15-play drives that are eating up a lot of clock. You don't score a lot of points when that's how you're moving the football. You're only going to score 17 to 21 points a game when you have that few possessions. So I think all of these things kind of feed into each other, BLG. And when we look at the offense not scoring a whole lot of points, they would benefit greatly by this defense getting some turnovers. And again, some of that has to do with luck. That's kind of a big rant there. I kind of went around a full story. I talked offense, defense, what all at once there. But as far as diagnosing this team right now, what needs to happen for this offense to get going?
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles rank last in touchdown passes longer than 15 yards. That's a problem. They can't.
That's not good.
There's no explosive element, really, to this offense. That's not to say the offense totally lacks quality players. I mean, you know, Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey are guys who are really good at moving the chains. And both of those guys have been great this season. But there's no one who's giving you that big play element. And that's a big issue. And it's really unfortunate that both Mike Wallace and Mac Hollins are down, because I think having at least one of those guys helps significantly with that issue. And who knows, maybe one of them or both of them gets activated off IR and that helps, although maybe a little bit too late, potentially. We'll see. Yeah. But I mean, I think that's, to me, the biggest issue with this Eagles team isn't some kind of like narrative thing, like, oh, they just don't know how to win, because that's stupid. They just won the Super Bowl last year. Like, what are you going to say? Like, right. Oh, they're not winning these games because they don't know how to win. No, that's just a dumb trope that people throw out there, and it's lazy. To me, the real reason is toxic differential, which, for those unfamiliar, toxic differential is big play differential. So, you know, like, big plays created and big plays allowed, which the Eagles, I think, rank 19th in created and 27th in allowed. And then turnover differential, you know, takeaways and giveaways, And the Eagles are obviously, they're not so bad with giveaways overall. It's not like they're giving the ball over a ton. They're not great with it. They're 18th, so kind of around average, but they're just not taking the ball away. As you said, so they're at the bottom five in the league or so around that. So when you combine those two things together, that's the issue. Like they don't make big plays enough. They don't prevent big plays enough. They're not taking the ball away and they're giving it over. At a rate where, you know, again, they're not taking it away enough to turn it over as much as they have been. So those are the issues right there. It's that simple. So moving forward, what do you have to do? I mean, I think some of it's just luck. You know, obviously they were so good with takeaways last year. You're not going to sustain that year to year. But, you know, the drop off has been probably a little bit more than just what's natural. You know, there's been and it's hard. Like, I don't know specifically.
Well, takeaways come in bunches.
Yeah, like what do you do as a coach to be like, we got to get takeaways? You know what I mean? You can't coach that into existence. I mean, maybe you scheme things up a little bit better, but I mean, at some point, players just have to make a play. Like you have to, you know, like some of these chances. And I think maybe going back to the Vikings game, I remember a play or two where, like, you know, the Eagles are sacking Cousins or they're sacking Cam Newton or whatever. And they're hitting him from behind. And I'm like, how's that not a forced fumble? Like, you know, go for the ball. Like, get the ball out there.
Yeah.
And especially with these rules that you can't even hit the quarterback anyway, just go for the ball. Like, get that ball out and get that turnover. Because, like, that's what this team needs right now. And I think there's some of that to Jim Schwartz's ideal scheme. I think that's why he's okay with players who potentially give up those big plays, because his theory – and this hasn't been working out in execution, but the theory is that, you know, he's going to have some guys who maybe give up big plays, but they're going to make some big plays too. They're going to, like, those double moves that they bite on, in theory, they should be picking some of those off too, because they're going to be aggressive. And sometimes they're going to get beat, but other times they're going to make the right play and they're going to time it up just right and they're going to get that turnover. Like, I think that's, again, it hasn't worked out that way. Like, it should, but I think that's the theory and the concept behind that. So maybe it's some of that. The big play thing offensively, like, they don't have the guy for it. I mean, especially, you know, wide receiver, like we talked about, you don't have Hollins, you don't have Wallace. I don't think anyone is suddenly, you know, coming.
Well, Shelton Gibson can't see the field.
He can't see the field. And that's just dumb to me, because, like, I know the coaches know more than me. Obviously, as Doug Peterson said this week, I mean, how could I know until I've spent 18 hours grinding the tape? But to me, there's just no good reason why Jordan Matthews should play 43% of the snaps like he did against the Panthers and didn't even get a target. And meanwhile, Shelton Gibson is playing like two or three snaps. Like we can't even out that disparity a little bit. Like, Shelton Gibson can't play something like 10 snaps and Jordan Matthews can take a little bit less. Like, That's frustrating to me. That doesn't solve everything. Obviously, it's not just as simple as playing Shelton Gibson more, but you'd like to see maybe something, like, do something different, because what you're doing now clearly isn't working. And I think that's kind of just the spot they're in. I don't see what's going to change. And with the running back thing, and that's part of my frustration with Wendell Smallwood too. And I really don't get people standing for him like they have. Like,
no.
Like, I get he's averaging 4.5 yards per carry, which looks good on paper. But you look at some of these plays on tape, and like, there are big plays to be had here. Like, there's a big running lane, and he turns a 20-yard gain into like a 5-yard gain. Like, it's just not good enough. Like, you need someone right now who can break a big play or give you some kind of explosive element in offense, and you're just not getting it. And that's why maybe the trade deadline, you know, something happens, but I don't know. And even if you do, I don't think that fixes everything. So it's just kind of the spot they're in right now. Like, as a whole, I don't think the Eagles really did well as focusing on team speed. Like, it's just something they don't have, and something that, like, needs to be a big priority in the offseason, like making this team faster.
Well, they thought Mike Wallace would be a better version of Torrey Smith, and just obviously the injury sideline that, and I think they thought Mac Hollins would be able to provide some of that spark as well, and, you know, the injuries leave you hollowed out as far as depth is concerned. And, you know, they play a lot of 2 and 3 tight end sets too, which, you know, when you play a lot of 2 and 3 tight end sets, you mentioned, you know, that that Matthews sees a lot, you know, 40% of the snap, received some 40 some odd percent of the snaps against the Panthers as a third wide receiver. But, you know, that's still, you know, you could if you played. And I wonder if maybe with the Jaguars down a number of cornerbacks, obviously, you know, Jalen Ramsey and Alshon Jeffrey is going to be a great matchup. And if I'm Jacksonville, I'm just having Ramsey shadow Alshon all over the field. But that you would think would give you an advantage on the Eagles side of matching up Aguilar against one of those third or fourth string cornerbacks. And maybe that's the maybe this is the week you use Shelton Gibson or even Jordan Matthews against one of their scrub cornerbacks. I know Jacksonville has a defense that's very similar to the one the Eagles play. They play back, they give receivers a lot of room, they rely on pressure from the front four, which is a very good front four. But in my opinion, you know, I love having Ertz and Goddard on the field at the same time, but maybe in this case, maybe you mix it up a little bit. You do something a little bit different. Maybe you play a little bit more three, a little bit more four wide receiver. Maybe spreading the field helps get you some more running lanes too up the middle, or if you're going to do some sweeps. Enough. And for me, BLG, we need to take a couple of weeks break from the jet sweeps. Mm-hmm. I mean, enough with the I get it. I know what they're trying to do, but I think it loses its effectiveness when you do it 5 out of 10 plays.
Yeah, the Nelson Aguilar, like, I don't know what's happening here exactly. Like, obviously, he looked great last year. I thought he looked even better in camp this year. Like, he specifically looked faster to me than ever before. Like, he was burning guys, and maybe that's just because the Eagles cornerbacks aren't awesome, but I don't think it was just that. Like, he was clearly, like, basically whoever was on him, no matter at any point, like, he was winning in the offseason. He looked really good. And then he had an injury in camp. And so maybe that's it. And he like never fully recovered. And it's kind of one of those deals. But I just like that's a big problem right there is and I don't think it's necessarily all his fault because as we're talking about how he's being used here. But at the same time, like there has to be a certain point where, you know, he's part of the problem. Right. I mean, he can't just be like he's this dominant player. And just how the Eagles are using him is solely holding him back. Like, I can't buy that fully. Like, there has to be some level of, you know, attribution to where Aguilar, you know, deserves some kind of blame here, or at least I think. So, but whatever the case is, and I don't even care who's to blame. That's not the point. Like, whoever is to blame, like, who cares? Just, like, just get it fixed. Like, they have to find a way to get him going. And maybe this week is the week because, as I said, the Jaguars are going to be without DJ Hayden, potentially, it looks like. He's traveling with the team, so we'll see, but he hasn't practiced, and he's been out for a couple of weeks. And then his backup, Tyler Patman, did not travel. So they could potentially be on their third string slot option, which I think would be rookie safety Ronnie Harrison. So and he's looked okay at times this year, but, I mean, that's something you want to test. Like, test him out of the gate. Like, get force-feed a couple of targets to Nelson. Not as jet sweeps and screens and stuff like that. Like, have him run over the middle of the field or actually maybe get vertical even at some point. Because outside of, like, those plays in the Giants game, which were kind of a little bit fluky, like, they weren't in the structure of the offense there. I mean, the one was, you know, like, that ball that pretty much should have been picked off, and it was almost like Nelson picked it off. Then the other one was where, you know, Carson was rolling out and the play was designed to go to one of the options that was in front of him and they were all just covered. So Nelson Aguilar broke off his route and, you know, they timed it up well and he got open. And to his credit, he did that. He deserves credit for it. I'm not saying he doesn't, but it's just not something you can consistently rely on because it's just not in the structure of the offense. Yeah. So I'd love to see the Eagles find a way to kind of get him more involved because I think that's one of the things this – like. We're talking about where can the Eagles find these explosive plays. Well, I think it could be Nelson Aguilar because he has that run after the catch ability. Like, I know we saw it last year. Like, he has some of that ability there. He's not going to be your pure deep threat burner guy. I just don't think he's that kind of player. But, I mean, if you're looking for something to change offensively, I think it's to find a way to get him more involved.
Yeah, stop treating him like a running back. You know, I know that the Eagles running back situation is not great, but treat him like a wide receiver and that might help. And we haven't talked about, we're like 45, 50 minutes into this podcast and we haven't once mentioned the name Carson Wentz, who, you know, it's kind of funny. He's been a big talking point. We're going to get to the defense here in just a second, but Wentz on the season, if you look at the numbers, they're incredible. 108.1 rating, 7th best in the NFL. He's got a 70.8% completion percentage. Has 1,502 yards and a touchdown to interception ratio of 10-1. He's averaging 300 yards passing per game. But again, the points aren't going up there. And we mentioned that the fact that he's had to go on long fields. They've had some missed field goals by Jake Elliott, who, by the way, we don't talk enough about Jake Elliott and, you know, kind of the bloom coming off of his rose. But, you know, I think that's a league-wide issue right now with kickers. So I think the Eagles just have to swallow whatever Jake Elliott's going to give them at this point. But getting back to Carson Wentz, you know, a lot of the narrative was, well, he had a chance to win the game at the end in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter. And it was not a good series for Carson Wentz on those final four downs. Obviously, we've seen a lot of film online about what it is he might have been seeing on that third down play where he didn't go to Wendell Smallwood, where he would have had a short first down. And on the fourth down play, when he eventually fumbled the ball, how Aguilar broke open late and was wide open in the middle of the field on that fourth down. And he just as he's about to throw it, he gets hit and fumbles. So, I mean, again, a little bit more of the luck that you were talking about, but that's also pocket awareness on the part of Carson Wentz. We haven't seen him win a game like that in that kind of situation before. We've seen him win games where he puts his team ahead in the fourth quarter, but we haven't seen a game like that where, you know, it's the last 30 seconds of a game, you're down, you have to score a touchdown, and Carson gets him into the end zone to win. But I think this is part of him learning how to do that, right, BLG? I mean, this is, I really hope that he stops trying, as I like how Ben put it, play hero ball and just take what they give you in those situations and not try to force it. Because I think he's overcompensating for the fact that they haven't been doing enough points-wise and getting big plays down the field.
Yeah, and I think when you look at his record in those close games and those situations, it's not great, obviously, but I think some of that's a little skewed because a lot of those games came in his rookie season, you know, and right. He was a rookie, first of all, and then the talent around him. Yeah, the team, the skill players and everything around him. I mean, they weren't even NFL players. Like, you know, Jordan Matthews was your best option. DGB was your second best option.
Oh, my gosh.
DGB. Josh Huff was there at one point. Like, these guys aren't even in the league anymore, basically. I mean, yeah. Jordan Matthews is barely in the league. Like, he wasn't even in the league for a little bit until the Eagles signed him. So, I can't. Like, I think the record looks a little worse just because of that specifically. But as a whole, it's a valid point, you know, and a valid criticism and a critique to say, you know, he needs to be better in those situations. I think it's very premature and very hot takey to say, like, he can't be good at that. Like, it's he's not even 2.5 seasons into his career yet. Like, he's right. Almost there, but it's not even fully there yet. So it's definitely an area he needs to improve. I think you could look at it as he is pressing a little too much, for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, how could I possibly think that, like, he's just doomed or he can't get better in those situations? Right. Like, just everything we know about him, his mental makeup, you know, his toughness, his skill, like just how good he was in that game up until that point. Like, he was awesome.
Yeah,
so there's nothing to me that just says, like, oh, less than 2 minutes left, he's just going to mess it up. Like, I just, you know, that's not how I'm thinking about it. He definitely needs to get better. I'm not disputing that. And yeah. I think he will. I think we will see that over the course of time. It's tough. You know, it's a tough situation. And I just think in general, the theory of clutch gets, like, overrated. It's certainly, I think, very overplayed. We saw this with LeBron a lot, especially earlier in his career.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's not clutch. What, I mean, like, it's just, it's dumb. Like, And to me, clutch is so subjective. Like, so a guy who, you know, goes like 40, like, let's say LeBron scored, like, you know, 100 points in the game, but he missed the game winning shot. So is he not clutch, even though he scored like 100 points? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like just the timing of things there, like, that gets kind of overplayed. Like it missing, you know, the one shot at the end of the game. Like, that just, and it does for people, like, it invalidates the rest of the performance, which is so dumb and silly to me, because it just doesn't account for everything. Like, Carson was so good in that game up until that point. And I'm not saying you just ignore the end thing either. I'm not saying it works the other way, but it kind of just seems to skew things, the whole clutch factor. So I know that's been a big topic.
He was on his way. I mean, he had led the team to what was their record when he went out last year? I mean, I think what were they, 12-11-2? I think when he went out, or 12-2?
So they played the Giants, the Raiders, and the Cowboys after that.
They played the Cowboys, yeah. So they finished 13-2. So they would have been 11-2 at that point. Yeah, so. I mean, that's the thing. He went 11-2 without having to do that because they were so good early in the game. But I will say, I'll talk about this in all sports. I've talked about this on the baseball podcasts I do, and you know, and you talk about it in basketball. I do think there are players who perform better than others and players who perform worse than others in clutch situations. Players were able to focus more, calm themselves down. I mean, there's a reason Joe Montana did what he did, you know, with fourth quarter comebacks, and Tom Brady is able to do what he's been able to do. And
absolutely,
there are some players who can do that. But again, I think that's a skill you also have to learn, and you have to get comfortable. And I certainly don't think it's out of Carson's DNA to learn how to do that.
He did it in college. He had some big games, he came from. I think one of the championship games they won, like he had this big drive at the end of the game to bring them back into the game.
Right. Well, there you go.
Never done it.
Right. Exactly. So everybody worrying about that, I don't think you have anything to worry about. And I think, you know, when we're looking at this game, a lot of times we look at these games, BLG, when we're looking around the league and we look at the quarterback matchup. And when you look at the quarterback matchup here, you look at Carson Wentz versus Blake Bortles, who was benched last week against the Texans, who went 6-for-12 for 61 yards in a 20-7 loss, who has 9 touchdowns and 8 interceptions on the season, an 80.3 quarterback rating. We know his history is that he's a bad quarterback. And I know in London he becomes Super Blake, and I don't understand what that's all about. I know the Eagles defense has had their issues with some quarterbacks with some interesting numbers. I mean, Marcus Mariota had the game of his life against the Eagles defense. But, you know, when we're talking about Blake Bortles here, we were talking about turnovers and the Eagles need to turn. You could not ask for a better quarterback to face if you want to get some turnovers and get yourself some short fields to help Carson Wentz out. I'm looking at this game, and I'm looking at the quarterback matchup. This is a game the Eagles should win because Carson versus Blake. The Eagles defense should be able to handle this Jacksonville offense with T.J. Yeldon and Carlos Hyde at running back, Marquise Lee, Dante Moncrief, D.D. Westbrook at wide receiver. These are not all pros, BLG. This is a game that this defense should be able to hold down this offense again.
They should, but they also should have been able to do that against the Titans, and they didn't.
Exactly so, right. Yep.
So that's the big thing for this week, and we'll get into it more at the pick. But like in making my prediction for this game, I can't trust the Eagles right now. Like, how could you? We just watched them blow a 17-point lead after they had already blown a lead earlier this season. So it's not even like they had this one game where they blew it, and it's a teaching point moving forward. Like, no, like that didn't happen. So. But at the same time, and I know Bortles plays well in London, like, how can I take him over Carson Wentz? Like, Carson has been so good, and it really just makes no sense that Carson has been as good as he has, and the rest of the team is not having success overall. Like, that doesn't, like, if anyone told you that Carson would have the stats that he does right now, which are better in some ways than where he was last year, like the start to last season, that the Eagles would have the record they did. Like, it doesn't make sense. So that's frustrating. I still feel really good about Carson, even though, you know, coming off of that game. And I still feel really bad about Blake Bortles because I think he sucks. And I think, I mean, they even said, they didn't say, but Adam Schefter said that he's going to be on a short leash. So he might even last the whole game because he might throw a couple of turnovers and they might bring Cody Kessler in. And if they lose to Cody Kessler, I mean, just honestly, just like, fold the season.
Sell everything.
Yeah,
sell everything.
What there can be no after the game. There can't be any. Well, Cody Kessler gets paid too. Like no.
Yeah,
like that's unacceptable at that point. Like that would be so weak and so terrible if Doug or Jim Schwartz did that. Like no, he does not get paid too. Like that's not that's not acceptable. So it would be such the way this season has gone. For Bortles to have this magical game. But with the Jaguars having these offensive line issues and just the offense kind of being out of sorts here in general, and with them just loving to run the ball so much, kind of, you know, plays into the Eagles' hand there. Because I think they should be able to stop Carlos Hyde for the most part. In that vein, I feel good about it, but as a whole, it's just, I don't know, John. Like, it's hard to talk about this team logically. Like, because we're getting into the matchup here. It's like, well, yeah, they should be able to do this. But then, you know, it just doesn't turn out to be that way. So, like, I don't even know how to be like, well, you know, they have this advantage and this advantage. Like, yeah, they do on paper. But then it doesn't end up that way on Sunday. So, like, we're just saying words and they're useless.
Yeah. Well, we'll say some more words when we make our official picks here in just a second. First, let's run down our non-Eagles Jaguars picks. And normally we pick the NFC East games, but with Dallas on the bye and you've got Washington at the New York Giants, we only have one NFC East game to go over. So we'll run down a couple of the other marquee NFL games too here. But looking at Washington at the Giants, BLG, Washington going to New Jersey to take on a Giants team, which again is just terrible, and it's a pick 'em. And I think I've seen in some places like Washington maybe is a 1-point favorite, which is essentially a pick 'em.
Wait,
I mean,
what?
Yeah, it's crazy. If people, they're,
what?
Vegas
what?
Is begging for people to put money on
that
Washington.
Is a
and I don't understand
fishy,
it.
Fishy line. What is happening?
Right.
This is money coming from. Like, who is? Are people like heavily? Yeah. What is that? I'm looking at this and I can't believe that. I don't.
I'm not making it up, am I?
I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Who is? So who's putting all this money on the Giants? Like, where is the public like that dumb?
Yeah,
I don't know. But that doesn't. Like, I'm looking at it, so I know you're not lying to me. But it's just.
Yeah.
How is that game a pick'em? Washington is 4-2. They're at the top of the division. I don't think they've looked awesome. I don't think they're a juggernaut, but they're clearly like at least a solid football team at
yeah.
worst. And the Giants are horrible. Like they played the Falcons a little bit closer, but like the Falcons aren't great either. So
right.
I don't know, man. I think that's like an easy Washington
it's
line right
really
there.
Really easy. It's really easy. Washington should be a 3-point road favorite.
What is that? I can't believe that.
This line has to move. It has to move.
Yeah, I mean the sharps are going to come in late on that, and that's going to yeah. like by like Sunday morning. I'm going to check up on that again. It'll be like like
well,
you
for
said,
now,
the 3 points.
For now, BLG and I are both taking Washington. This is pretty
yeah.
easy. And even if it was a 3-point line, I'm still taking Washington.
It'd be great
game.
If the Giants
yeah.
won somehow. I mean, that'd be awesome.
Oh yeah, we're rooting for you, Eli.
Yeah,
do what you got to do, buddy. I mean, Saquon, please. We're also going to look at this Green Bay at LA Rams game. I think, you know, we looked at that Washington line as a pick 'em. The Rams are great. No doubt about it, BLG, but 10-point favorites
Ooh.
Against Aaron Rodgers, even at home, that seems high to me too.
Ooh, yeah. I think, yeah. Oh, I didn't, man. I
think this is a close game.
Closer. Yeah. That's that. These lines are really surprising me here. Yeah. I just think, like, if anyone can knock off this Rams team, it's Aaron Rodgers. I know
right.
the Packers aren't great as a whole, but like that's what Aaron Rodgers does. He comes out here and against all odds and against a team that's clearly better on paper, like mm-hmm. he's going to get that win. Or at the very
yeah.
least, I think he's going to keep it to a one possession game.
Like, yeah.
Freaking 10.5 points in some places here. That's crazy. Give me the points. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and Rodgers likes to come up in big games like this against big teams and show up and shove, you know. So I think this is a 7-point game, 6-point game. I'm taking Green Bay on this one too. And then you've got New Orleans at Minnesota. Minnesota the Vikings in Minnesota, a 1-point favorite against New Orleans. What do you think about this one?
I know the Vikings have won a couple games here, but they're not against the most impressive teams. And obviously, I'm throwing the Eagles in that bunch. They've
yeah,
beaten
right.
the Eagles. They've beaten the Cardinals, and they beat the Jets. I'm not, like, in on them once again. The Saints should have beaten them last year, and I'm sure they're going to want revenge for the Minnesota Miracle there. With this game being a pick 'em, I mean, gee. I usually lean with the home team in a situation like this, but I just think the Saints are really, really good, and I'm just not all in on the Vikings. So I'll take the Saints, especially, you know, if this line swings somehow and they're getting points. But for now, it's a pick 'em, and I'll just take the Saints.
I'll take Minnesota.
Okay.
BLG. I'm going to take Kirk Cousins at
you
home.
Would,
you know my love for Kirk Cousins. No, I think Minnesota is starting to play a little bit better. I still don't love New Orleans' defense. Obviously, the offense is something else. But I think Minnesota has the offensive talent to stay with New Orleans point for point. And, yeah, I'll take the home team here, favored by just one. So I'll go with the Vikings on this one.
Okay.
All right, so finally it comes down to Eagles versus Jaguars. And I finally got a game right last week, BLG. I'm now 1-6 picking Eagles games. And unfortunately, it's kind of funny. When I was talking about the game, you asked me, because I was just joking around. I was like, yeah, the Eagles are going to lose 35-20. But I honestly felt they were going to win. In my heart of hearts, I actually – felt they were going to win. But you asked me,
yeah,
like, if they're going to lose, how are they going to lose this game? Yep. Like, really seriously. And I thought, well, you know, Cam Newton runs around, makes some plays.
Yep.
And the words, I actually said the words, if they lose this game, it'll kind of be like the Titans game.
Oh.
Where, you know, and damned it. I mean, I was kicking myself. I'm watching the game like, I wasn't even serious when I said it. And damned if it didn't happen exactly that way. Like, you know, the way the Eagles lost that game on Sunday with Cam Newton running around making plays at the end of the ball game and the defense not able to stop an offense that had been struggling through different parts of the year was really uneven. And so, unfortunately, I got a game right last week. I'm going to let you start here. Eagles versus Jaguars. Eagles 2.5-point favorites on the road, although both teams are technically, you know, both teams are on the road playing in London, but it's considered a home game for the Jaguars. Who you got? Eagles, Jags?
Yeah, I'm just going to basically repeat what I said earlier in that. I don't feel good about the Eagles right now, and I'm very tempted to pick against them, but I just, like, I can't, because I think about this team has Carson Wentz still, and Carson Wentz is still very, very good. And even though Doug Peterson, you know, might not have as much faith in him as we did coming into this season, I still feel good about him overall. And I think despite the Jacksonville having experience playing in London factor and all of that, and in spite of Doug Peterson throwing shade at Doug Marrone in his book and Malcolm Jenkins kind of calling out Blake Bortles, as I'm saying all this stuff, I'm feeling even uneasier. But I think I'm going to take Jacksonville to cover. I think it'll be a close. I'm going to say it's a close Eagles win, 20-19. And do I feel good about that pick? No, I don't feel good, but that's what it's going to be.
All right, I'm going to go. I'm with you, man. I because in my dream
they should be able to beat them.
They should be able to beat this team. Carson Wentz versus Blake Bortles. I mean, if I was not an Eagles fan and looking at this game objectively, I'd take the Eagles in a second. I'd look at the Eagles and I'd say 3-4. This is a team that's better than their record indicates. They really should be 5-2, if not for a couple of mistakes here and there against some weaker opponents. This is a team that still has a lot of talent despite all of the injuries. They've got Carson Wentz, who is playing well. And I do think in this game, BLG, the reason I'm going to take the Eagles is I do think they finally get on the good side of the turnovers. I think they finally get turnovers here from Blake. I think Blake throws him a couple. I think maybe he fumbles one, or I think one of the running backs fumble one. Maybe the Eagles get a special teams play that helps them get a short field. I think I see in this game, I can see a scenario where Blake Bortles does them in like Marcus Mariota does, but I think we're more likely to see Bortles turn it over a couple times. I do think you'll see Cody Kessler in this game, and I think you'll see Carson Wentz finally get some short fields to work with. I don't think they'll turn necessarily. The Jaguars defense is very good at keeping teams out of the end zone and making you kick field goals, very much like the Eagles defense typically has been able to do. So I think this is going to be a pretty big field goal game. I'm going to say 16-13 Eagles.
Okay. I like the turnover theory. I think that's a good reason to pick. I think they're due for some progression to the mean there, some positive regression, if you will.
I really believe it comes in waves. I really believe that's how it works with the turnovers. Yeah. You see it a lot. So, well, BLG, this is a game they got to have. And I also just can't see them falling to 3-5 because they fall to 3-5. This season's over before it really even gets started.
Yeah.
You go into the bye knowing you're pretty much toast. And I think you're looking to sell some pieces that you don't think you're going to want long term. So
hopefully not. Hopefully it doesn't end.
Hopefully not. That's why I'm going to keep the good thought. And we're going to hope we see an Eagles team come out of London at 4-4 heading into the bye week, maybe looking to add some pieces from the trade deadline and get healthier. Get a couple weeks for guys to get a little bit healthier. And that'll do it for this edition of BGN Radio. Thanks, everybody, for checking us out. Once again, follow Brandon on Twitter at Brandon Galton, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Remember, early start time on Sunday for this game, 9:30 a.m., so have some breakfast with the birds. And once again, make sure to check out bleedinggreennation.com every day for the latest Eagles news there. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on BGN Radio.
That doesn't make sense.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.